Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Soccer matters.
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back. Matt Peterson in for Glenn Davis tonight. Don't forget to head over to Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture on Fondren. Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture should be on your bucket list of furniture shopping. Longtime sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Danish Inspirations and Jan Christensen presents the best selections of modern contemporary furniture, including the Stressless line. Jan just got back from Denmark. Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, 2775 Fondren, danishinspirations.com. Our next guest is the head coach of the Houston Dynamo, Tab Ramos. He joined me to talk about the 3-2 win for Houston over Dallas over the weekend and the upcoming matchup at Minnesota.
Joined here by the head coach of the Houston Dynamo after a very successful week, 7 points, 2 home games, 1 away. Tab, welcome to Soccer Matters.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, let's go back to the Texas Derby on Saturday, 3-2 over FC Dallas. I know you had post-game availability, but now you've had a few days to think about it, dissect it. What do you take away from the 3-2 win?
I was really happy with the team. You know, I thought we were much better than a 3-2 win. Unfortunately, it became a 3-2 win in the end. But, you know, the way I always look at our team is, and I tell the players this, I judge us by how we play when we're tied and when we're winning. Not necessarily when we're losing, because when we're losing, yeah, of course, it's nice to have that determination to come back, right? And you don't want to lose that from any team. That's important. But I think it's important to play well when you're winning and when you're tying, because that's at the same time that the other team is trying to do the same. And I felt like in this game, we were far superior for about 90% of the game as we were winning. You know, both at 2-0 and at 3-0, we had the best chances to go further ahead. So I was really happy with that. I thought it was probably one of the more complete performances that we had this year. And I was really happy with it.
All right. Griffin Dorsey continues to play well. He was so active, especially in the first hour or so. Not an easy role entering his largest playing time as an MLS player during the winless run, but you stuck with him and he kept performing. What can you say about him just continuing to produce, given this opportunity as a young player?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Griff and I have a little bit of a history. You know, he was on my under-20 national team, and he was one of the players I let go halfway through qualifying because I was allowed to bring players from overseas, from Europe. And so he understood that at the time. So it was difficult this time when he came to me after getting released from Toronto for me to say, hey, look, all I can do is give you a fair chance. And I knew he would do a great job. He worked really hard, and, you know, I think he sort of represents everything that I want all players to represent here. He worked really hard to earn his position, and he came from nowhere. And that just shows every player here that everyone has an opportunity to show and to do well, and he's done it.
Yeah, high praise from you in your post-game comments to media. You said you knew the type of player that you brought in, but you didn't want to take anything away from Darwin Quintero and the presence he has for you in the middle. But I think there are moments in the game where Griffin carries us, and you're very happy about that.
I am. And obviously, we know Darwin's quality. You know, Darwin has had really good moments for us this year. I think Darwin's playing has been coming and has been getting better since about the beginning of July, I feel. maybe the middle of June, and he's at a better moment now. But I do feel like, you know, Griffin has given us that desire, that, you know, that work rate, and that ability to not be afraid for 90 minutes. And that's helped us a lot.
Similarly, Michael Nelson, it's tough as a goalkeeper. You have to be ready. It's that hurry up and wait, old adage where you're a backup goalkeeper, maybe third on the chart, maybe second. And it feels like, the starter is locked into the role, and all of a sudden Marich gets injured and Nelson gets the opportunity, and he's been a big part of this run. What can you say about him and him making the most of his opportunity as well?
Yeah, you know, there are sometimes as a coach where you don't feel the confidence on a second goalkeeper, and you feel like, oh, you know, now we lost a starter and that's going to be a tough run for everybody. I don't think that's the case with anyone here. I had full confidence. You know, I only had that happen to me one time, and that was, you know, the last U20 World Cup. But it's not a usual case where you feel really comfortable with goalkeepers, you know, whether they're starters or not. And I think Michael has done a great job in practice. He's had many, many weeks in which he's been great in practice. And so actually it's been a good opportunity for him, and he's taken advantage of it.
All right, Darwin Quintero, obviously a big talk among the fans, the performance he's put in the last few games. And you said post-game, he's adapting to a new role in there, and I think he is doing a good job. So if you can, take us into this new role for Darwin. Maybe is it simply he's defending more, he's being asked to defend more? Is there something more nuanced than that?
Yeah, I mean, he's sticking clearly to what the game plan is. And the game plan is, you know, for him to sort of be guarding the distributing midfielder on the opposing team and to stay as fresh as possible to receive balls between lines. And we don't want Darwin to come all the way back to receive balls and hit those sideways passes. I want Darwin, if possible, to get the ball less, but to get him in better positions on the field. And I think he's doing that. And I think he finds himself more fresh in those situations to be able to make plays.
All right. Minnesota this Saturday, you've played them a few times already this season. What do you make of this matchup, and what are you looking forward to for your group?
Yeah, Minnesota's beaten us twice. You know, they're a very good team. You know, they have good players that play in particular in between lines. You know, it'll be a difficult match, but I like where we are right now. You know, our team has confidence, and there's no substitute for that. I mean, of course, it's going to be difficult. Minnesota is one of the more difficult places in the league to play, but we're ready. We're ready. We know where we are. We know what we need to do. And I'm confident that we'll, you know, that we can get a result there.
All right. Teenage Adebi, of course, designated player signing, came in, and you've been highly praiseworthy of him. What can you say about his growth week by week? And he seems more and more comfortable game in, game out.
I don't think it's normally going to be the case when you sign a player and you get 110% of what you think you were going to get. And I think that's what we got with Teenage, because he's every bit of the great center back that we thought we were getting. And he's even better off the field as a person, encouraging teammates, wanting to win for the club, wanting the club to do well. I mean, he's been more than we could have hoped for. And I think he's clearly, for me, one of the best center backs in the league.
All right. Shifting focus to the under 23s. I think this is something not getting a lot of focus among the general fans, but within the club and around the league, it's very important this year. This pilot league, and it sounds like you guys maybe once a week go 11v11, and this weekend there'll be a real game against Chicago. So take us into the under 23s and the opportunity for the young guys to integrate with the first team.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could show you my board, but, you know, I have the under 23 team fully on my board, just like I have my first team. You know, and this morning I had Kenny Bundy, their coach, in here with us, planning the rest of the week training, not just for the first team, but for the under 23s. So we're constantly moving players up and down. Our 23s will be here with us. When I say here, I mean on our field tomorrow. We'll be training together. Everything we do here is together. We're trying to develop the best youth system that we can, and one of the best in the country. And I know that takes time. And I know that at the end of the day, my job is just to win this Saturday. So what happens here 2 years from now is maybe not as important. But I can tell you that every day we come to work planning for this club to be good for a long time.
If you could, for the fans and listeners, explain maybe the pros and cons of an under 23 team versus a second team, like a Dynamo 2 or an RGV affiliation. What is maybe pros and cons of this new setup?
I don't think there's any cons to the new setup. I think for us to work together every day, for us to see the players every day, for us to have the opportunity to move players. Sometimes we move, players who are 16 years old and 15 years old to our first team for training and for practices. I think we're at a good place. I think if I had to say some cons, it would have been in the past. It would have been likely our affiliation with RGV. That didn't work. And it, not that it didn't work because RGV was not a great club, because they're more than you would want for a second club, but it was just too far away. It doesn't work when you can't see the players every day. And now we have them every day. We have a great staff, and I think we're working well towards the future.
All right. I'm not sure if you've been in discussions much because you're busy preparing for Saturday, but big news from MLS this week with Liga MX, the Reimagined Leagues Cup with CONCACAF Champions League places on the line. It sounds like MLS will take a full month-long break every summer and play this. It sort of sounds like a condensed US Open Cup, but involving the Liga MX teams. Do you have any thoughts on that and what it could mean for the league in the years to come?
I think, I don't know the specifics of the affiliation between the leagues and what this will mean, but what I can tell you is that this is great for both Liga MX and for MLS. I think going into the future, this is what's going to bring the type of fan base that can eventually compete with MLB and the NFL. We need this, and hopefully it'll work out. It's not easy with the schedules and with the calendar when you take into consideration international calendars to add to that. I'm sure they've thought of that, and that's holding the plans, but I think we definitely need this.
All right, let's shift focus to the national team. It's been a few weeks since the octagonal, this unique three games in a week. I loved it as a fan. A lot to talk about, and a really desperate win for the U.S. against Honduras. Greg Berhalter, very aggressive at halftime, down a goal in San Pedro Sula. I don't know if you had a chance to go back and watch that game or if you watched it live, but what did you make of the U.S. performance and Greg Berhalter being aggressive with the subs at halftime and it surely paying off?
Yeah, I was, I obviously watched every minute of every game. I thought that our game against El Salvador, the first one, would dictate sort of how the qualifying would go. I thought if we had an easy game there and won by 3 or 4 goals, that qualifying would be easy. I thought if we tied there, it's going to be a battle. And I thought if we lost there, we would struggle to qualify because we have such a young team, not because we're not good enough. That's definitely not the case. I think we got the tie there, which proved that it would be a struggle. We struggled to beat Canada in the second game, a game we could have lost. And then in Honduras, I would have told you at the end of the half that, whoa, we're in big, big trouble here. And then in the second half, we went back to a regular lineup of a 4-3-3, and the players sort of were in positions they're used to playing. And I think we showed the quality that we have, and we showed that we can make this qualifying easy. But certainly we have to prove that in the next three games.
What do you make of the competition? I think a lot of fans are just very critical of the U.S. when they don't get the result, but it's talked about quite a bit. MLS has made the region better. The national teams 1 through 8 here in the hectagonal is better. What do you make of kind of the U.S. and its competition game in, game out here over the next few qualifying rounds?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say, if you had to look at all the teams, and obviously Jamaica didn't have all their players for the first three games. If you had to look at all their teams, you'd have to say El Salvador likely on paper would be the weakest team. So I'd have to say I'm really impressed with the job that Hugo Perez has done with that team, how well they play and how hard they compete. And if you're looking at that one of the weaker teams, then you know how close it is between all the teams, because Mexico has had a tough time. U.S. has had a tough time. And it looks like Canada and Honduras both will have a tough time with both Panama and Costa Rica. So I think it'll be a tough qualifying campaign. I do think that Mexico and U.S. in the end will be the cream of the crop, and they will be ahead. But I think any of the other teams can qualify for the other spots.
Tab, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us tonight here on Soccer Matters.
Thank you very much.
That's Tab Ramos, head coach of the Houston Dynamo.
Don't forget to head over to Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway in the Mark E. Entertainment Center. 18 monitors, plus an extensive whiskey list, plus the best in beers. And I can attest, great burgers, Bangers in Mass, Shepherd's Pie. Hugh O'Connor's the home also of the Houston LFC, the Liverpool Supporters Club, one of the top soccer and football watching spots in Houston is Hugh O'Connor's. Get in there. Say hello to Peter, Dave, and Goose. Hugh O'Connor's Pub. We'll take a break when we come back. Head coach of the Houston women's soccer team, Diego Bocanegra, 8-1-1 on the season. They upset University of Central Florida, although Diego might not call it an upset. Coach Bocanegra joins us after the break. This is Soccer Matters.
Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Former Nittany Lion, wearing the captain's armband, drives a nice ball into the near post. What a save from Santiago. And then it's stuffed in. And the Dash will go up 1-0 here. It comes via the corner. And it comes from Bree Vasali. Still the Dash here. It's a chance here to make it 2. What a goal it is. Fantastic finish. Makame Gomera-Stevens, also her first ever goal. That's a 2-on-1 if they hurry. It's Prince driving out a defender. It's still Nichelle Prince to make it 3. Yes, she does. Nichelle Prince.
That is the voice of Glenn Davis as Houston Dash beat Tigres Femenil 5-1 Sunday night at BBVA Stadium. And a tie to that club is our next guest, Diego Bocanegra. Diego, welcome to Soccer Matters.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Diego, of course, was an assistant with the Dash in 2017. He took over the Houston soccer program at University of Houston that same season. Great success before that as an assistant at Notre Dame, Cal State Fullerton, Cal State San Bernardino, and UC Riverside. And now one of the biggest wins in UH program history, at least during Bocanegra's run. Last Thursday night, 1-0 over Central Florida, a deserved victory, a dominant showing, particularly in the second half. And a great win. You're now 8-1-1. That was your first conference game. Give us a sense of how important that win was for your program.
Well, it's a huge win. I mean, we've had some tough games leading up to that, but that was definitely the best team we've played so far. You know, take the Rice game out of it. I think Rice and UCF are clearly the best two teams we've played. But anytime it's a conference game, it just matters a little bit more because now you're dealing with conference standings. Conference is the easiest way to get into the postseason. You know, first goal is always to get into the conference tournament, with the ultimate goal getting into the NCAA. So being able to knock off a nationally ranked team, and go 1-0 in conference is just, couldn't ask for a better start.
All right. Well, the poll came out yesterday, the Southern Region poll, and I know you're part of that. Kind of that board that makes recommendations for it. But I think a little disappointing for your group. 7th, you're 8-1-1, you were 9th, and you get a bump from 9th to 7th in the South Region poll. Can you give us any insight into that? And is that just more bulletin board material for your group?
Yeah, so that's the United Soccer Coaches poll. I'm actually not a part of that. So that is literally just coaches and what they're voting on. I'm part of the NCAA regional committee, and that takes heavily into the RPI a lot more. And to be fair, no, our strength of schedule hasn't been the strongest compared to some of the other teams in there. And to be honest, it's nice to be ranked this time of the year, but I don't care where we are right now. I care where we are at the end of October. That's all that matters to me. So if they want to put us 7th or 9th or not in the polls, it doesn't matter. It's great recognition for our women, but like you said, if teams are going to continue underestimating us, I think that plays into our favor and doesn't bother me one bit.
Diego Bocanegra, our guest. I've enjoyed calling your games on ESPN Plus for University of Houston. And, man, you have a deep, talented squad. 13 different goal scorers. Your leading goal scorer is a freshman from Southern California. Her name's Nadia Kamasa, and she's done most of it off the bench. Andrew Driver and I were laughing. She scored the first goal and hardly celebrated, even though it was a tap-in. but you have Ziona Brown, 7 assists, and she could be your leading scorer, but she has been provider. And then Jasmine Grant, big-time player. Jasmine Grant had the game-winning goal against UCF. How hard is it to fill out a starting 11 and manage the subs right now with this attacking group?
Yeah, I mean, the starting lineup isn't as hard as you would think. You know, I'm going to go with experience. When you look at Jasmine and Zai, even though Nadia is leading the team in goals, she gets the benefit of coming on in the 30th to 35th minute when the defenders have been chasing Jazz and Zai around the field and are pretty tired. I'm not taking anything away from Nadia because she did start two games and provided in those games. I mean, the one game she started, I think she scored in the first minute of the game. So Nadia just is one of those players that has a nose for goal. But as we go deeper into the season, it's not going to matter if it's Jazz, Zai, Nadia, Anna Raisa, Caitlin Matthews, Maddie Gear, Maddie Bowers, CeCe Cross, A.D. Hudson. It doesn't matter. We have so many weapons that we just need to make sure one of them or a couple of them are firing and on that day. And I like our chances to score. So if we can put our focus on keeping the ball out of the back of the net, we have, like you said, you call our games, we've got a lot of offensive weapons. It's fun. It gives the coaching staff a lot of flexibility. We can play with two forwards. We can play with three. We can move players around, and that makes it really fun.
And then let's go to the defensive side of your team, a great partnership. It's Colorado to New Zealand, Emma Clark and Cassidy Formanek, both seniors, and in front of them, a fifth-year senior in Mia Brasha, who had a great game Thursday night. Describe those three players for our listeners.
Absolutely. If you look at kind of the core of our team and who we want to be, a lot of it starts with those three. Cass and Emma as our center back. They've been basically starting off and on their freshman year. And so from about the middle of their freshman year, they've been in the starting lineup. And now that they've been partnered with each other, this is year number four, they just have a good understanding of who they are, what their strengths are. They're leaders. They're two of our three captains, and they control the back line. Now, Mia Brasha was normally our number 10. She was our attacking midfielder. She actually led the team in assists 2 years ago. But due to some injuries and just the changing of the team, last year she became our sixth, and she's actually thrived in that role. It was the first time she was recognized with all-conference accolades playing the holding mid. She still gets her assists, or at least sets up plays, but she does so much work to the untrained eye that's unnoticed. Between the three of those, they just control that part of the field, which makes it easier for everybody else.
Diego Bocanegra, our guest, he was at Notre Dame as an assistant the 3 years prior to coming to Houston. What sort of championship elements did you see at Notre Dame? And what have you done over the 5 years to kind of bring those from South Bend to Houston?
You know, it's funny. Soccer is a game that it's transferable at different levels, different schools. And I think more than anything, what I noticed was any championship caliber team that I'd ever been a part of, whether it was at San Bernardino, at Fullerton, at Notre Dame, and now at Houston, you have to have the right mix of players. And so getting the players in alignment, on the same page, understanding the system, and understanding that somebody's strength is going to make up for an area that we lack somewhere else. And if we can just play to our strength, then we're going to give ourselves a good chance to win. And so that's what we've really focused on. We spent a lot of time with mental training. We spent a lot of time with personality training. We spent a lot of time off the field so that we can transfer that onto the field. And every championship caliber team I've been a part of, there is that team chemistry. There is that hunger, that desire to win off the field that carries on to the field.
You have a great staff in Gus Moda, Chelsea Patterson, and Morgan Ferreira. Patterson and Ferreira, both former college soccer players. Ferreira is a pro, sometime in Europe, also Orlando Pride. She was the American Athletic Conference offensive player there a few years ago. And you told me a few days ago that, you know, she was part of UCF as a player, and then she chose to come to Houston as a volunteer assistant. That's a feather in the cap of your program in itself.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, the staff that we have, you know, Gus is a tireless worker. He is nonstop recruiting. He does well with our goalkeepers. And he holds our team accountable because he tells you the truth. And then you get Chelsea and Mo with their playing experience, and they get to look. Gus and I were never female college soccer players. Those two were. They can share their experiences with the team. They can relate. They're a bit younger. Our players really feed off of that. And yeah, they both won championships as players, Chelsea and Mo. And so we have all that. And I get to, again, that's part of my job, playing to our strengths, playing our coaching staff strengths. And so I try to get the best out of them, because then our women are getting just so much information from four different people. And just like anything, you learn different ways, you hear different things from different people. So I'm blessed to have the staff that I have.
Diego Bocanegra, head coach of Houston women's soccer. They're 8-1-1 after their win over number 14, Central Florida, on Thursday. Was there a moment in this five-year build where the players started changing things? I feel like with a championship team, you need the players to set the tone. The coaches can ask for standards, but the players have to hold each other accountable. Was there a moment or a turn for your program at some point?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Since I've been here, I've been preaching, I want a player-led team. If it comes from the coaches, we're only going to be able to go so far. And so we really spent time with the leadership. And this is a culmination of four hard years of work. So throughout these 4 years, we've really, really focused on the players that are going to lead us and taught them how to lead and what they can do in the locker room, away from the team, in the classroom, and it all comes together. And so I don't know that there was a point, but I would say summer of 2020, during the pandemic, seeing what was going on and how we responded and how much just individual responsibility they took and how together we came, I knew we were at the beginning stages. As we went into the spring season in 2020 and we came together, I said, oh, we're right there. We're close. And I think the end of that season, having the first winning season in 10 years, gave them belief. It gave us some momentum, beating UCF on the last game of the regular season last year, just propelled us as we went. And then we returned the majority of our team. So I knew that the core of our team was there. All we had to do was onboard and integrate our new players as quickly as we could. And we were ready for them, and they were ready to just jump on board. So I don't know that there was one specific point, but it's been slowly leading. You know, success is a funny thing. It doesn't happen overnight. Overnight successes happen over 4 or 5 years or longer.
Okay, Coach. Well, thanks so much for this. How did the last one, real quick, how do the players respond to the win against Central Florida? How has practice been since that win?
You know what? They were happy. We have a rule on our team. At the end of a win, you go in the locker room, you enjoy it, celebrate, go to sleep. When you wake up the next morning, it's time to move on, because the next team doesn't care if we won or we lost. So if it's a win, if it's a loss, doesn't matter. Time to move on. And credit to our players, we did not have that big game hangover. Were we a little emotionally tired and physically exhausted? Sure. But not this team. This team, that was one step. They're not satisfied. They want a lot more, and I'm really happy to see that.
Diego, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations on a great start to the season.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt.
That's Diego Bocanegra, head coach of Houston. They're hosting Arkansas Pine Bluff Friday, then a big road trip at South Florida, at TCU, and at SMU. Three really good road tests. Quickly, a word here for FM Kitchen and Bar. It should be your go-to for the best craft cocktails and fresh food. Get out on the patio, beer garden, indulge in the best burgers, chicken sandwiches, street corn, salads, and more. Plenty of monitors to watch the Premier League, Dynamo, and Dash. FM Kitchen and Bar has an incredible brunch as well. Don't forget the new second location for FM Kitchen and Bar. Producer tonight, Andrew Carlson, has been outstanding. A UH alum himself, I'm sure he enjoys the success for Diego Bocanegra. Final break. We'll come back with Tom Claren, Glenn Davis. This is Matt Peterson in for Glenn. You're listening to Soccer Matters.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
That's a bad back pass. Here's Latsko. Tries it first time. What a goal. Instant reaction. No hesitation. Pounced on a bad back pass. And it is now 4-0 the Houston Dash. It's Latsko now. Squares it to the penalty spot. Vasali tried to lay it off. Gomera Stevens has got a second. It's a spectacular goal. It'll be a second. It is now 5-0 Houston Dash. Basically a two-on-two here near the corner flag. Valle is going to get a good-looking crossing, and there's their goal. And they will reward the Tigres fans that are here. A fantastic finish. It was Caddy Martinez.
Hey, let's talk about our presenting sponsor, the Daspit Law Firm, here on Soccer Matters. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are personal injury attorneys. If you get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle, you might work in a refinery or drive an 18-wheeler, call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They will work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get the representation you need with Daspit Law Firm. Glenn had a chance to catch up with Manchester United author Tom Clare. So we'll hear this interview. We'll talk about Manchester United and its recent form and also get some remembrances from Jimmy Graves, the England legend who passed away over the weekend. Here's Glenn with Tom Clare.
We're fortunate to bring on the noted author, the noted historian, Tom Clare, who wrote the book growing up in the Manchester area, Forever a Babe, The Men Who Were the Busby Babes, Deepest Red, a couple of his incredible books. You can get them at Amazon.com. The author and historian of Manchester United, Tom Clare, joins us now. Tom, thank you for coming on the program tonight.
It's great to be here with you, Glenn.
All right. Sad moment. Jimmy Greaves, another one of the great legends we lose. Spurs legend, incredible goal scorer. Just some of your initial thoughts on him.
Yeah, well, really, yesterday morning when I woke up and heard the news, you know, I could only think it's goodbye to one of the greatest footballers ever to play the game. And a big piece of English football's rich tapestry left us yesterday with the passing of Jimmy Greaves. Without question, he was the most prolific and natural goal scorer that England has ever produced. 266 goals in 370 games for Spurs and an incredible 44 goals in 57 games for England. He made goal scoring look effortless, Glenn. A master dribbler, running at pace with the ball, seemingly glued to his feet, gliding past defenders if they weren't there, then rounding hapless goalkeepers before passing the ball into the net with regular ease and with either foot. For me, he was the very last of the dying breed, and the likes of which we will probably never see again in our lifetimes. A gentleman on and off the pitch, he carried himself with an understated modesty that our current generation of so-called football superstars will never even understand, let alone try to emulate. What would Jimmy be worth in today's game? Well, you couldn't put a price on him, and neither should we. He was simply priceless.
We're talking about Jimmy Greaves. We're talking about him with the author, Tom Clare. Again, some of the books he's written, Forever a Babe, The Men Who Were the Busby Babes, Deepest Red. I highly recommend these books, Amazon.com. Tom, what was he like as a person? Because he did have some demons, as did many footballers back in those days.
Well, initially, he came into the game, Glenn, in the late 1950s, around about 56, 57, as a young 16-year-old prodigy. And then he made his debut in 1957. But when he was young, he was a very shy type of kid, really low-key. But, of course, as what happens when fame gets bestowed upon you, you know, things happened. And unfortunately, similar to George Best in a lot of ways, the demon drink in his later years got hold of him, just in his latter years at Tottenham and certainly in his years at West Ham United. But he fought through it. He fought through it. He went through some really bad times. His marriage broke up, but fortunately that was repaired in later years. And, you know, he became teetotal and he's lived a long, long life. He was 81 years of age when he passed yesterday. But he had some bad times with his health as well. He suffered a number of really horrible strokes You know, but he fought the demons and he won the battle in the end.
Jimmy Greaves, we're talking about the legendary England striker, Spurs striker, widely considered one of the greatest goal scorers of his generation. By the way, also played at Chelsea, AC Milan, and West Ham United during a sparkling career. Record goal scorer in English football's top flight with 357 goals. And we're talking to him about him with Tom Clare, the legendary author. Tom, Jimmy Greaves, I see how he's revered. I see how everything is being written about him and place him in that 66 World Cup squad, because before we got on the air here, tell me the story about him in that 66 World Cup squad, because he ultimately did not get a medal per the rules back then, despite the fact that he was on the team.
Yeah, he was in the squad and he started in the first game against Uruguay, which was a no-score draw. But then he played in the second game against France, and he was the victim of a really bad tackle, which it split the shin, and he had to have 18 stitches put in it, and it put him out of the 1966 World Cup, unfortunately. And you know, it opened the door for Liverpool's Roger Hunt to step into the team. But it was a bitter disappointment to him. It really was, because there was no doubt about it. If Jimmy Greaves had been fit, he would have played in all five games in the World Cup, and not Roger Hunt. You know, it was sad that he didn't get the winner's medal. But in later years, the whole squad, I think it was about 8 or 9 years ago, the whole squad who was still living, they went to the Prime Minister's residence in Downing Street and were presented with World Cup winner's medals from that era.
Fantastic stuff. We're talking to Tom Clare, forever a babe. He's an author, also incredible historian for Manchester United. If you want to learn more about Manchester United from someone who grew up in Manchester and went through the whole thing with the Busby Babes, it's Tom Clare. Tom, I saw Harry Kane with Jimmy Greaves, and I thought it was a magical moment there. Has Spurs over the year done enough to keep his legend alive and his presence alive as a club?
Well, they've made a lot of money from it, like clubs do, you know, from his image rights and what have you, you know. I don't think they have. You know, I think, you know, in the modern day now, players from the 60s, you know, they tend to get forgotten. Certainly, I don't think they looked after him as you know, happens, and unfortunately that's a sad story of the game today.
Tom Clare joining us. We're talking about Jimmy Greaves. You know, you go into what was once White Hart Lane and now the new Spurs Stadium. Are there any things in that stadium, statues or photos or anything that depict Jimmy Greaves?
I've never actually been in the new stadium, Glenn, so I can't really say, but I doubt it. I doubt it, unless they have a museum. Now, if there is a museum at White Hart Lane, I think it would be criminal if there's nothing of Jimmy Greaves' things in there, because he contributed so much to Tottenham Hotspur in the 6 years that he was at the club.
So, Tom, if I had young Spurs fans listening to this show tonight, what would you want them to additionally know about Jimmy Greaves, and why? How could you link that to the modern day game with the likes of Harry Kane and Son at Spurs?
Yeah, Kane and Son are absolutely role models for kids today. There's no doubt about that. But what I would say to youngsters today is if they can, to get the parents to take them onto YouTube and to watch a lot of the clips of Jimmy Greaves. There's some tremendous footage of him. Some of the goals that he scored were unbelievable to see. And if it had been in the modern day, you know, there'd have just been eulogies all over the place for him. He was one of the quickest footed players, and by that quick feet, the way he could move the ball from foot to foot, from side to side, you know, absolutely brilliantly two-footed and aware of where the goal was. He had that thing that you can't really coach into a lot of strikers. And that is, you know, to be in the right place at the right time, and his anticipation of where the ball was going to drop was second to none. He was electrifying, and you could not give him a second. He was a defender's nightmare. He wasn't the biggest of players. I think he was about 5'8", 5'9". But his movement was quick, and he could turn defenders. And as I say, you know, they knew they had their hands full when they were going to spend a Saturday afternoon marking Jimmy Greaves.
Tom, was the fact that he was that quick and elusive and could ride tackles, was that sort of a defense mechanism for him against what at the time was, let's face it, you could brutalize skilled players back then?
There was a lot of what we used to call hatchet men back in the game in those days, really, tough, brutal defenders. But Greaves, he just had this knack of hurting them where they were meant to hurt. He had the perfect temperament. They could batter him. They could kick him. He'd just get up and he'd get on with the game. And they're sure as eggs are eggs, Glenn. By the end of the game, he probably hurt them most of all by sticking two or three goals in the back of the net.
Tom Clare joining us. Forever a Babe is one of the books he's written. I would also suggest Men Who Were the Busby Babes. Deepest Red. This is all about Manchester United. Tom grew up going to Old Trafford. You can get his books at Amazon.com. It's Tom Clare, C-L-A-R-E. All right. Jimmy Greaves he had a great second career as a broadcast man with Ian St. John, a former Liverpool player. They called it St. and Greavesy. Tell me about his broadcast career and why he appealed to people that love the beautiful game.
Well, they were two, Greavesy and St. John were two ex-players who were brought into broadcasting by the independent television company in UK. And they were like chalk and cheese, but they rubbed off on each other. And their sense of humour was absolutely unbelievable. And they had an hour programme every Saturday lunchtime on match days. Match days, Saturdays, it wasn't the same without sitting down for an hour to watch St. and Greavesy as they analysed the games that were going to be played that afternoon. But they rubbed off, their personalities rubbed off on each other. And it was an hilarious hour to watch and listen to. But not only that, their knowledge of the game, because of their careers and the honours they'd won in the game as well, it was second to none, and they were well worth listening to. People, especially youngsters as well, they idolised St. and Greavesy.
So there was a blend of just, number one, two guys that their chemistry was excellent. There was some great humour in there, but there was also tremendous analytics and things people could take out of their conversations to prep them for the games.
Without doubt. And they would tell things as they were. You know, there was no glossing over things or anything like that. If something needed to be said about the game, you could bet your life both St. and Greavesy would be there at the forefront, you know, criticizing.
Talking to Tom Clare here. Do you miss that from the game today? Do you think there's too many people that are announcers, commentators, talking about the game that are just 100% in the bag and are afraid to be critical in a healthy way?
I do, Glenn. I do. You know, it's sad in a lot of ways. I listen to a lot of the pundits today, you know, and it breaks my heart to listen to some of the things that they come out with, you know. And again, I'm not decrying them because they weren't superstars or anything like that. But they just don't seem to have the fervour and the knowledge that those old players, you know, used to bring out, you know, which made it such a pleasure to watch and listen to them.
Tom Clare joining us. Tom, you said you had an opportunity to watch him at Old Trafford way back when you were younger. Tell me about that day and what you remember about Jimmy Greaves.
It was the opening day of the 1958-59 season, Glenn, when United were at home to Chelsea on the first game of the season. And it was the season after the Munich disaster, actually. And Chelsea came to Old Trafford with what was quite a good team. They'd been the first division championships just two seasons before. And in the side was this 17-year-old crew-cutted kid, Jimmy Greaves. You know, we'd heard a little bit about him, but that day he was electric at Old Trafford. Although Chelsea were beating 5-2, Greaves scored both the Chelsea goals, and one of them I will always remember. Harry Gregg was in the goalkeeper. It was the goalkeeper, and I asked Harry about this when I spent some time with him a few years ago, where Greaves brought the ball through and he walked the ball around him. And Harry told me, he said, normally with a young player, he said, I could sell them. He said, I could force them to go the way I wanted them to go. He said, but Greaves, he said, he danced past me like a ballet dancer. He said, he left me sat on my backside. He said, he just walked the ball over the line into the back of the net. You knew then when you saw this kid, just what an impact he was going to have on English football.
Tom, as always, a big, big thank you. Thank you for all this reflection, these comments, and helping us get to know Jimmy Greaves better, the legendary Spurs and England striker. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
It's my pleasure, Glenn.
That was Glenn with Tom. Claire, thanks to Tom for his time. A final word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. Leasing and buying a BMW can be easy at Advantage BMW Midtown. Advantage BMW Midtown will take you through the entire process and get you in a 3, 5, or 7 series or an SUV. Advantage BMW Midtown has you covered. Sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. Get that Houston hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown. As Glenn always says, go see Steven and Justin. Advantage BMW Midtown, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Matt Peterson signing off. Thank you to our guests. We had Tom Clare. We had Diego Bocanegra, University of Houston soccer. We had Gary Bailey, the former Manchester United goalkeeper. We had John Arnold from The Striker, Texas. And Andrew Carlson, our producer, did a great job organizing the show. Glenn will be back next week. Matt Peterson saying good night. This has been Soccer Matters.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.